Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us on Somebody to Me podcast, where we have meaningful conversations with influential somebodies, focusing on their mentors and unsung heroes that help them get to where they are today. It takes a village to build anything. It takes a community to care about something. And it takes a whole lot of individuals to come into our lives at different moments to change it forever. I'm your host, Sam Dannon. And if you think you have to actualize your dreams alone, Somebody to Me is a reminder that you don't. Christina Porhabib is the editor of the coffee table book, The First Pair. Her work considers how sneakers become an entry point into the broader subjects of race, gender, class, and identity. After participating in Nike's Air Max Accelerator program, Christina expanded the focus of The First Pair to create The First Pair Plus, The Next Pair. The double-sided journal features conversations with legendary women who have been instrumental in shaping sneaker culture and with some of the fresh faces who are forging new paths and shaping the future of the industry. This is where the opportunity not only to work with Christina happened, but it's also the start of a friendship that I value and respect deeply. Between the laughs and the sharing, there's also something that happens to me personally every time I talk with her, and that's comfort. Even while this episode is about her and the somebodies in her life, Christina always finds a way to make you feel included. It's the mindfulness for me because she always reciprocates the energy. So here's Somebody to Me, Christina Porhabib. Hi.
Hello there.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. Can you not? Can you not check 1, 2? Okay. So... Well, no, for real. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I feel like I've been wanting to do this with you for the past year, you know, jumping off the book that we did together. I didn't want to just like be like, okay, let's just jump right into it now.
Can we do the podcast?
Right. So I'm actually really, really excited and so honored to have you because I really want to, like, I met the Christina from that very moment. I don't know, except for the stories you've shared with me, the Christina before and kind of where I found you and where you found me in that place in our lives.
It's so crazy. Yeah. Like, we'll be able to unveil a lot of stories.
This is a deep dive.
This is a deep dive. And I think it's like, I'm definitely excited to be here. I think it's long awaited. And I'm so glad you asked me to come on the set of
Not the
You
set.
Are somebody to me. No, it's just someone
Not
to me.
Not the set. I know, we're official today. Okay, so... The first question I want to kind of jump off with is, who was the first person who influenced the work that you do now? And we can start there.
So I feel like, well, first of all, when I think about Somebody to Me, I feel like there's so many people that I can credit. And I think if I'm looking specifically at like, okay, the work that I'm doing, there's a few women that have been influential along the way. So there's my eighth grade teacher who, you know, in lieu of taking the final, asked me to write a paper. And I was just like, okay, well, if I don't have to do a final, of course, I can just write a paper. That's nothing. And then afterwards, I didn't know what the lesson was until after. And
she remember her name?
You know what? I actually tried to find her name. Uh-huh. It was on the tip of my tongue too.
Miss.
Yes, Miss. she was amazing though. Okay. She was actually a transfer. Like she had came in like the middle of the year and she was only there for possibly I think that year. And afterwards she was like, I wanted you to do this because I really think that you could do something with your writing and you could take it seriously. And I'm like, okay, I think I was only in like eighth grade. And so that was kind of that. And then high school, I kind of had a similar run-in. It was my 10th grade teacher. I do remember her name. It was Miss Rutter.
Okay, Miss Rutter.
Miss Rutter. And she was very interesting in the way that she taught English and the way that she taught literature. That was very fascinating to me. And she kind of echoed a similar sentiment of my previous teacher. And she was like, okay, like, I don't know what you're considering for, you know, a major or for school, but you could actually take this seriously. I'm like, okay. So those were kind of like the introductions, like these little tiny eggs that had been planted. And
before you, sorry to interrupt you, but before you move forward, you're going to laugh when I say this, okay? But I feel like everyone did this, okay? Middle school and high school, like everybody, you know, like wrote in their diary, you know, or, you know, made little silly poems. I know I did. the subject matter is so interesting when you're younger.
Yeah.
You know, the music that you're listening to is about heartbreak and like, why'd you do this and why'd you leave me? But like, have you really experienced that? Or, you know, maybe you did experience loss at a young age. Maybe you didn't. Maybe, you know, so in order for them to even, I guess, compliment you and encourage you to even dive deeper into your writing or hone in on your skills, what were the subject matters that you felt like you were excelling in or your favorite subject matters to write about?
It's so interesting because I feel that the more creative kind of writing, vulnerable writing, I didn't really share that with anyone. You know, I think they more so were looking at maybe possibly the mechanics, like sentence structure, things of that nature. But absolutely, I think that I actually found one of my journals from I was in like sixth or seventh grade. Uh-huh. And you talk about like feeling things to the deepest level of your core. I was just reading it and I'm like, wow. And I know I felt this and it was so visceral.
I know reading I felt it. This. Yeah, I know it.
It was so intense, you know, but I started practicing poetry very young. Yeah. But I think what they saw excelling at, I was always curious about learning about the mechanics of writing and how it expands further than just like, you know, reading and writing, but mm-hmm. actually making it like into a craft.
Yeah.
And I was very inspired in learning about different writers and different women and men that we read about in literature. So I would always ask a lot of questions. That was a big thing for me in school and trying to understand the why and what is behind the story that we're reading. You know, okay. That was always very big for me. So that goes back into college. I ended up majoring in English and I took a bunch of creative writing classes and it was my junior year. And my cousin Robin, she's actually a writer as well. I had reached out to her and I was like, she was living in New York. And I said, I want to go to New York. I want to get an internship. Yeah. I want to strengthen my writing. I really want to take this seriously after I graduate from college. So when I've looked back and surveyed, okay, where I've started in my journey of really taking writing seriously to where I am now, I do feel like Robin was very influential. Everything from facilitating relationships, when it came to I wrote and had an internship out there with Uptown and Heart and Soul magazine. And there were so many connections that, you know, and people that she introduced me to. One of the big things I took away and learned from her was learning how to like trust my gut. One of the things she always would tell me, like if she proofed an article that I wrote or was editing something, one of the things she would always say is like, these are just my notes, but trust your gut. And so I learned from like a young writer to not doubt myself, you know, and you know, if it feels right, like go forth with that, mm-hmm. but always be true to the story that I'm telling. I didn't even realize, you know, why I'm thinking like, oh, she's just saying that to kind of be nice or, you know, not to feel like she's giving me so much edits without. Right. But I looked back and I was
feeling. Yeah,
but it was so important because I was really learning how to tell stories, mm-hmm. you know, and she helped me find a space to really like curate and develop my voice within that while also being able to interview people. Mm-hmm. That was another craft I needed to learn of how to create a space where people feel comfortable to talk and share. And that's a whole experience in and of itself. So I really sat and thought about this because we've gone from, I even lived out there, you know, with her and her husband when I moved to New York and for my internship and even after college, like, and they have helped so much along the way. I've even like, you know, wrote and helped her with, you know, other ventures that she's done. Like she's brought me on board for things and it's just like such a good environment to be able to like learn and grow from.
Especially with somebody that you trust and that you're close to.
Absolutely.
It's one thing that you guys have familial ties, but also somebody that you could be vulnerable with, like, hey, I want to work on this. You know, hey, can you read this for me? That could be, you said earlier that your writing was really personal, coming from a personal place. So that's extremely helpful and amazing that you had somebody to nurture that.
Yeah.
And also like maybe approach you in a compassionate way when it came to you actually taking this seriously.
Absolutely. And when we have had a larger gap. So she, when I was younger, she wasn't really around. She was already at college. Mm-hmm. So even being able to build and develop that relationship on a personal level was also very important as well. And I remember she would send articles, like email, like she had like an article in Vogue. I remember she like had interviewed Rihanna's hairstylist. And I was like, I read it and I was like blown away. I like emailed her back and I was like, wow, this is amazing. I was like, what exactly are the outlines of your career? This is so cool. And I was just like, okay, like ultimate fangirling, because I was like, wow, like I had, I knew that people were like, you can do this. I didn't know the possibilities, the levels that you could really go with your writing. And so I was just like, and I was hooked. After leaving New York, I loved New York. I loved the energy and the people. I had my first cover story with like a national magazine.
Love
and
that.
I'm just
Which
like,
one?
Wow, Heart and Soul. I interviewed Keke Palmer.
Fun.
So fun.
What a fun time.
We were like the same age. So it was, it was.
That's surreal.
It was a great experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great time.
I want to ask you kind of at this time where you're at, what is your community looking like? Like, who are your friends? Who are you talking to more? So you did mention Robin, you did mention a couple of teachers, but I know that when you're younger, you may or may not gravitate towards people who are interested in the things that you're interested in, right? Funny enough, like I, of course I have friends who are in the creative field, but when I was younger, not really. I was the one, you know, the only one who could even merely doodle, but I felt like I didn't really have like anybody kind of talk to about that or share that with really personally. That's like as close to me.
Yeah.
So what were your friendships like?
I guess looking back, it was a lot of us just trying to like figure out our way. I don't know that we were specifically like, okay, this is what we want to do. But I know that there was always some sort of like creativeness there, whether it was acting, whether it was painting or drawing or like public speaking. I think what was interesting when I look back is we were all open to try things. That's really cool. There wasn't any like, I'm too good for this. Like everyone was trying different things. Like I like played sports. So I had like friends when it came to the athletic side. Like when I was in college, like I wrote for the school newspaper. So I had like writer friends. And then I also was writing with for the athletic department. So I kind of had friends in different areas. But the thing that I found that even if the areas of study they were in or majors, if it wasn't creative, there was always a creative outlet.
Right.
You know, where it's like, okay, like I might play sports, but, you know, I love to sing or I love to DJ. There was always, I felt like the community I was around of trying new things. But also growing up, like my family's very creative. So, you know, my cousin's a painter. My dad like paints. My uncle had a gallery, you know, so I've always like, this is like, I'm used to being in a space like this. I'm used to being around people that express themselves creatively. Maybe that happened to be people I gravitated towards, but I tried to find, you know, ways to learn from people I was around, even if they weren't as creative as I was. But as I've gotten older, I have found groups of people where I have more similarities because we're a little more solidified in our fields and the work that we do. I think you're a perfect example of, you know, being brought together, of working on a book and having these similarities and you being able to design and being so great when it comes to that, but also being able to facilitate a friendship. I think that, you know, God brings people into your life in different periods. And this has been a period where I've had more of like work and personal kind of collide when it has been a little bit more separate.
I love that you brought that up because I feel the same way. Yeah. It's the gravitating towards people that may not do exactly what you do, but they're just the outlets of really who you are and who you want to be.
Yeah. And you can find really a way to like support one another because I feel like there's something you can learn and take from anyone.
Right.
You know, and so I tried to find that. And I think this idea of pouring into one another.
And don't you feel like the older that you get, the things that you're more interested in that I guess could be considered work just overlap into life. So there's really no separation there in which there's no separation with friendships too.
I think that's the beauty of it, right?
Yeah.
Like being able to create and work, but also like love and have fun. And mm-hmm. it's just like, it's like this circle where it just continues to grow and evolve with each other.
Yeah. So I want to go back to when you were working, mm-hmm. which is so exciting. I also had this fantasy that I was going to, really my fantasy was I was going to design for a magazine.
Yeah.
I swear I'm going to move to New York. I hit up like anybody I could. I'm like, oh, I'm work for a fashion magazine. I want to do layouts. I mean, I'm glad that it didn't align for me. You know, it doesn't align for everybody. So thankfully you had opportunities. I know you said you try not to doubt yourself in your writing. Were there any moments of doubt when you were looking for jobs or opportunities out there? And were there moments of like, you felt like people weren't taking a shot, giving you a shot, I should say.
Yeah.
And were there any of those moments?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it was when I moved out after college, and I was like, okay, like this makes sense, right? Okay, I want to be, I'm a writer. I have published articles. Okay, the next thing that makes sense is for me to, you know, become an editor, associate editor, like kind of be on the board somewhere, be on an editorial team. That was my idea of like the next steps. And, you know, I had already been doing freelance work. I had some connections already with a few streetwear magazines. And, you know, I remember I had gone on like 3 or 4 interviews, and they were like, it was at the point where I'm like, okay, like this is like, I've got this. Like the last one, I remember it was just like, they just wanted me to like write like a sample article about something. And I was on a time limit. And
you closed your eyes. You're like, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, cool. Got it. It was, I remember I had to, and you know what? I had to actually write about, it was like an orange, like Gucci jacket that was dropping, and I needed to write something about it. And I did it. And I was just like, okay, I'm guessing that's it. And it didn't. And then I never heard anything. And I'm like, okay, I'm following up. And the person who I was speaking to, I got rerouted to someone else, and it just didn't pan out. And I was very shocked because I was like, it didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. I was sure that this is where I was supposed to be. I was sure that everything worked out. I did have a moment where I thought, do I want to do this, when I was told that I was going to have to do about like 5 to 6, like these really quick story blurbs each day.
And you're like, I don't know if that's
the life
for me. I
thought about it, but I was like, you know what? Like, you know, that may just be for right now. You know, you get in the door and that is what it is, but it didn't work out. And I was kind of faced with, okay, I can either continue on, and I kept doing freelance.
Yeah.
But that's when kind of like the idea of like the first pair was brought about.
Oh, I want to know.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
It was this idea that I really wanted to tell these stories, and I didn't necessarily have a place for them. And I thought like, perhaps I can make it into like a longer form article. Maybe I can do like a series and I feature different people. But I knew I wanted to do something around sneakers and the stories that have like connected people to them. I just wasn't really sure how big it was going to get. And so when I started, I just like how we're having a conversation right now, I just start talking to people I grew up with, people that I knew loved sneakers. And I just wanted to know, like, what was this moment like where you really like fell in love with sneakers, when you like laced them up, looked in the mirror, and like really felt fly? Like, I wanted to know that moment. There was also this idea when I was looking at, for example, like the articles these magazines were writing, or looking at the culture itself and how much it had shifted from when I was younger to at that point in time. And it was also this idea of wanting to, you know, remember the good times. It's like nostalgia that I wanted to tap back into. It was funny because I was out there. I don't know if I had got my place yet. I might have been at Robin's still.
In New York.
And she was actually finishing up a book as well. And I had like helped a little bit on the tail end, just like assisting with a little bit of the editorial. And I was like, I've always like, this would be really cool. Like, I wonder what is the capacity of turning this into something bigger? Because it felt much larger than an article at that point. It was just growing. The stories were so vast and so rich. And it was like, I started just looking around and I didn't see anything like it out there. There was nothing like what I wanted to read, and it really became into like creating what you want to see. And so just started the interviews, and I started hired really local photographers. Like, I remember it might have been Robin's husband who found this guy. He might have just been on the block taking pictures, and we just like asked him like, hey, like, are you a photographer? And he was like just getting into it, and you know, he would just go around the city with me, and I would see people with like dope outfits. I'm like, hey, I'm working on this project, I'd love to talk to you for like 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I'd interview them, and he would shoot them while mm-hmm. I was interviewing, and they were very quick. I transcribed them. I like kind of like the same the setup with the first pair plus the next, and just, okay, what are these moments I want to put into? I'm going to use like these like quotes and then fuse it with the photographs. So that's kind of how, you know, the first pair was birthed, and really wanting to also, I think, as a woman, add my voice to the conversation, a space that of we all know how male dominated it is, and just create something that I hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How fun, because when I was first getting to know you and I learned about the first pair, it was so exciting because for me, that's what this is kind of about, mm-hmm. is like featuring and spotlighting somebody's, you know, and it could be the pause for fireworks. It could be the simplest of stories, the simplest of backgrounds and circumstance, or it could be the most incredible, amazing. In which case you were starting the conversation with their first pair of shoes, their yeah. first pair of sneakers. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like it unpacks so much about a person. Yeah. Not even, you know, I could learn so much about a person and not even ask them, you know, where are you from? Yeah. How's your family? Like, the pair of shoes kind of tell it all. So that was really exciting for me to discover that you were going out of your way to discover these people and wanting to tell their stories. You know, these might be a little quirky questions, but you're my writer friend, okay? I don't know. I don't just like know writers that like, no, I don't just know editors. Yeah. I'm like, oh, this is my friend's book. Yeah. I would love to. But besides the first pair, that was a concept,
yeah.
right? When you are ideating or when you're trying to figure out what it is that you want to write about, I'm sure you write about everything, mm-hmm. but you posed a question that you were trying to find answers to, in which case the answers are infinite. Mm-hmm. Are there more questions that you have that you want to explore to tell more stories from other people, but also make sure that your perspective of storytelling is shared too?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to also just really quick and go to what you said. It's like also telling like my story in that as well. Yeah. I feel like that was also important for, I think, just saying like as a woman and also like getting my story out. So that was also important for me. But absolutely, there's so many questions that can be asked. A lot of it, I think about like, what are the stories that I feel like I have to tell? Mm-hmm. That if I don't tell this, like, it's just like burning inside of me, which is how I approached the second project with Nike. So I really sat there and I'm like, okay, when I really look at how things are going, if I'm looking at this specifically in this community, right? What are some of the stories I feel like aren't being told? How can I create something that allows access to broader stories and the stories that people need to be hearing about? And that's what led me to women. I had so many conversations of, okay, it's not fair for women, or their, you know, the size discrepancies, or there's so much when it comes to not being represented as a woman in this culture. And I was also talking to so many women that were doing things about it, you know, that they're like, okay, enough talking about it. Like, this is what I'm doing to combat all of this. And I'm like, these are the stories, you know?
You introduced me mm-hmm. to them through your work.
Yeah.
And that opened up so much for me, that all of their stories are so incredible.
They're amazing.
So for people that don't know, Christina edited and wrote a book Call the First Pair. That's the first book. And then the second book is The First Pair plus The Next Pair. And then do you want to kind of just really quickly talk about The Next Pair or The First plus The Next Pair?
Yeah. So that is the second project that is all about the women in sneaker and streetwear culture, the ones that have paved the way, the ones that have, you know, offered their shoulders for the next generation to be able to stand on. And the next pair are, you know, the women that are really shaping what the future looks like. They are constantly putting in the work and they're not really letting what the past or the current situation looks like to define what they see, you know, and they are supporting one another and doing things for like young women coming next, young Black and Brown women, which is very important. And they're just so inspiring, you know. It was literally just the 1 year from when the book released, and to see they've gone on to do some amazing things. And I'm so excited because there's just so many more stories, you know, but I'm excited that, you know, these stories get a chance to exist in a space, in a physical space, and you can interact with their stories and put them in your home and, you know, have them forever. There, of course, we are like vast beings and we have all of these experiences. There are stories of loss and love and triumph and defeat. And there's so much that I want to get into, you know, because all of those elements take place in these conversations, you know, with me asking you about your shoes. You might remember losing your father and the one pair of shoes that he gave you or the ones that you cherish. Like, you know, there's so many elements. And I think that's what allows this connection as humans, you know. And it's, I might just be asking you about this first pair of sneakers, but the connection that we're able to make and the answers they expand so much further than just shoes. And that is the idea, that it's not just about sneakers. It's really the community, the relationships, and how we support each other.
Yeah, absolutely. It really resonates mm-hmm. with people. Mm-hmm. And then women really, really highlights everybody's stories. But I feel like what it also did was have them, I guess, reflect.
Yeah.
What would be the part of the story that I would tell, right? Like, I have really been ruminating on the first pair of sneakers that made me feel fly.
I would love to know that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think, since you've been ruminating.
Okay, well.
Enlighten me.
Wow. You're going to laugh. You're going to laugh because it's two part.
Okay.
One I'm so embarrassed about, but you know what I'm going to say is my story. You know, I went to a predominantly white school in which is also a beach school. And, you know, everybody wore kind of like flip-flops. Okay?
Okay.
But the flip-flop.
What is the flip-flop?
Was the rainbow flip-flop.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, the Rainbow Factory is in San Clemente. So it's not, you know, it's a drive.
Yeah.
But like me and my brother would beg my dad and my mom, like, Can we go? So I finally was like in it. Actually, there's so many things that they made me feel fly, but I'm so embarrassed to talk about. Shout out to Uggs.
Shout out to Uggs.
First, I had fake ones because we couldn't afford the real ones. And then my mom finally got me some Uggs. But I will say was my senior year of high school. I was gifted these like highlighter dunks, these like low highlighter dunks. And I was in ASB, so, you know, of course, the pep rally, I'm getting ready for the pep rally. I'm like, I know what shoes I'm going to wear. Of course.
Yeah, of course.
The highlighter dunks, you know?
I remember those too.
You know, and there was this like, I'm quoting streetwear store called The Attic in Buena Park. Uh-huh. You know, I'm living in Orange County at the time with my family. So that's the closest like quote streetwear cool guy store. But you talked about discrimination within like women in sneakers. Mm-hmm. A size 5 in women or a size 3.5 in boys.
Yeah.
It's unheard of.
It's non-existent.
Where? Mm-hmm. You know, forget the collabs. I know. So when I was gifted these, I just felt so cool. I felt so seen that, and they weren't kid size.
Yeah.
They're women's. Okay.
There you go.
They're women's. But I think I felt fly because one, they were a gift, and two, because I felt like I was representing something that I didn't realize at the time I was representing. It was in my senior year that I really was starting to find my identity as a brown woman. And I didn't realize how big of a deal the shoes were to me. And the reason why there was an even more of a big deal is because then there was this guy I met after, like, he went to a rival school, and he had recognized me from those shoes. He was like, "Oh, the girl with the with the dunks. Yeah. That's so cool. You played basketball." And I was like, "Oh, yes,
that's me.
Look no further." But see how that even just being able to be asked that question just brings you all the way back, and for you to be the person that finds these stories so purposeful that need to be shared and documented, that really says a lot about you and your interests and kind of what you want to put forth.
I mean, I think that stories are like the most important. It's what connects us.
Yeah.
You know, that is, it's always been so important to me, is how you we understand each other, you know? And we tell stories in all different ways, you know? I just happen to tell stories through writing, you know? Like, you can tell stories through design. Like, Mike and them can tell stories through painting. You can tell stories in any type of way. The thing is that we're all just sharing our experiences in hopes to connect with each other.
Right.
That's all it is about.
For people, for the somebodies who are interested in writing, right? Or I guess don't have a Robin, or have the teachers or the professors that saw something in them that they didn't see in themselves. You said it yourself, like, there are so many paths to writing that you don't even, there's interviews, there's this, there's editorial. I guess what would you say would be a really good token of encouragement for them to explore past what is expectant of a writer?
Yeah. Well, I think first off, like, we all have somebody, even if it's not, you know, a physical embodiment, but I think about it when I was like sitting in my bed, laying down with my like iPod on and my CD player, and I'm listening to these songs. Like, I'm listening to the lyrics. I'm listening to the way that they write. They're storytellers, you know?
I literally just envisioned Brandy.
Yeah.
I was like, that's going
through all the feels, you know? But those were like singers, musicians. That was my first like introduction into storytelling. Same goes for writers, you know? When you pick up a book, those are your somebodies that you can learn from. Those were some of my, you know, best teachers along the way. Toni Morrison, you know, James Baldwin, these figures that I might never meet, but I have pieces of them. I have, you know, words and sentences and paragraphs that I can learn from, and I can learn how to discover my own voice and, you know, to formulate like thoughts and ideas about the world. I think if anyone's interested in being a writer, and if you ask any writer this, they'll tell you that you have to read. That is the number one thing. In order to be a great writer, you have to read. There is no way around it. You need to understand different forms of writing. You need to understand different genres, and also don't limit it to just things you're interested in. If you just like fiction, don't only read fiction. Like, read all of the genres and just immerse yourself in how writers play and manipulate language, you know, and in that you're able to become inspired and find your own voice. When I first read Toni Morrison, The Bluest Eye, I was like, wow, this is what writing is. You know, it has the power to span like centuries, you know, and to break cultural barriers. It has the power to make the reader feel seen and loved and important. And that's what I want it to do. That's what I want my writing to do. I want people to see themselves and to see how important they are and to know that their stories are important. And so I think with anyone interested in writing, those are the first thing I would suggest, is like to read, but also look around your community, look around, you know, just outlets that you have. I would go, my mom would take me and Charity, my sister, to the library all the time after school. And we would just like pick books out. I've always been around, you know, education. So with my mom, she was a teacher for 38 years. And so I have, you know, a model of education and knowledge. And then my father immigrating from Iran and starting his own business, like I have, you know, a model of entrepreneurship. So the importance of learning and, you know, constantly pouring knowledge into yourself, but then also like creating your own path. So I have both of those. And I feel like if you don't see something, like you can always create it yourself, which is what I did and what so many of us do.
I mean, shout out to your parents.
I know.
They are so sweet.
They're amazing.
And then Charity, I was just talking to her up. I'm like, she blows my mind.
Yeah.
For all that you've mentioned, for all the people you've mentioned, your parents, your friends who kind of became creative outlets for you, all the people, what do you find is a definition of somebody to you that I want to say stands the test of time in your lifetime?
Mm-hmm. I think somebody to me is someone that like sees you even when you don't see yourself. You know, someone that allows you to strip down to like the most vulnerable parts of yourself and just holds that space with you, and there's no judgment, and like really allows the space for you to become the somebody that they see and know that you can be. I think that our lives are filled with somebodies. You know, I think that even my teachers, they might not have had the somebody that they were in my life. You know, they might not even know that there's somebody that I'm still talking about, you know, but I think that for someone to be able to hold space for you and to allow you to feel seen, I think that that's somebody. And I do believe that God sends different somebodies in all of our lives. You know, sometimes we have to get a little more quiet to know that they're there. Sometimes we might not recognize it right away, but I do feel that we all have somebody.
I love that answer. I think it really resonates with me because of just even this space, just mm-hmm. holding this space together here. But it also just, I think it's a big reminder of the somebodies that come and go. Yeah. Into our lives, right?
You don't know why.
Right. And that's okay. And that's actually wonderful. Like you hit the nail on the head. You said you don't even know if those teachers would ever know that, you know, they impacted you in such a huge way.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like you don't become somebody to other people in hopes that they're talking about
exactly.
you know, years later, and they're really singing their, you know, praises about you.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't do that for that.
Not
you just
at all.
Are an incredible somebody to other people.
Yeah.
And I love that.
It's important too. I've come across this belief lately, but also like not everyone is going to understand your journey and your story, you know? And like this idea that it's okay to be, you know, misunderstood. Like you might come across. And that's the thing, you're going to have all types of somebodies, right? And there might be, you know, someone that doesn't believe in your journey, you know, or doesn't speak life into your situation in the way that you would have hoped or liked. And, you know, and that's okay. I've got very comfortable with this idea that not everyone is supposed to get it. It's okay to be misunderstood. And, you know, my journey is not for everyone to understand. And I'm okay with that.
That's absolutely.
Yeah.
It's really okay. And it goes the other way around as mm-hmm. well. Before I ask my big, you know, that big honking question, it's not necessarily that I want to ask you what's next.
Yeah.
I more so want to ask you what is the progression that you want to maintain and sustain and groom and water.
Yeah. I think... I always feel like I can definitely, you know, we can all get better. We can all improve. And I want to just continue holding spaces like this. I want to continue to be in spaces that feel sacred and feel like I can really heal and grow from. But more than that, like I want to just continue telling stories, continue telling like amazing stories that people can really like heal from. There's so much, you know, when you ask of like, what's even this idea of what's next? Because I mean, naturally, we're always, okay, what are we going to create next? What are we going to do next? And there's so many things I want to do. And I feel like there's so many, you know, subject matters to fall into. But I think just continuing the conversation, that's what allows for the right stories to come about.
I think, too, that's why I was so, I didn't want to ask what's next, because I think we miss the what's now.
Yeah.
And I know what you're working on. I know what you're thinking about. I know what you want to do. Mm-hmm. That doesn't necessarily mean that's what's next.
Yeah.
It's what's right now. Thank you.
Of course.
Okay, this big question.
Yeah.
How do you want to be remembered as somebody with influence in history?
Yeah, that's a big one. Let's see. Well, I think first and foremost, I think it's so important of just like the love that I have for like my friends and family. I always want them to feel that regardless of me being here or not. And I really want the stories that I tell to live on. You know, I want people to read these stories and to kind of interact with the different works that I put out and really like see someone that created a space for others to feel seen. You know, I feel like it's so much bigger than me. It's all of this is bigger than me. And if I can create a space for someone else to feel important and to feel like they matter, then I think that that says it all right there. And to be able to tell a great story along the way.
How did I know you were going to give such a A plus 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 answer? Ooh, gives me chills. Okay, this is the part I didn't share with you ahead of time. So this is my Are You That Somebody rapid fire questions.
Okay.
So it's just going to be fast. You're not going to think about it as the first person, first name.
Rapid fire's making me nervous, but I'm excited.
First name that comes to mind.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh gosh.
My little list.
I'm nervous.
Who is a person that makes you laugh?
Oh my gosh. You said I can't think about it. It's supposed to be the first person.
Fast, right. First person.
Probably Charity. Okay. Yeah, my sister, she makes me laugh most of the time. I mean, I've been laughing with her for what, 30 years?
Yes,
so, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Who is somebody that deserves a spotlight?
Someone that deserves a spotlight, black and brown women.
Who is somebody that you can call any time of the day?
Probably, so weird. Probably my mom. Yeah. No, actually, my dad. My mom might not answer the phone. Like, she's always looking for that phone. Yeah, my dad.
It's because she can't find it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, my dad, for sure.
Your dad. Okay. Who is someone, dead or alive, you wish to meet one day?
You know what? I really wish I had a chance to meet my dad's mother. He always tells me stories of how much I remind him of her. And I feel like, you know, I've been able to understand myself more of understanding the women that have come before me. And that's the only piece that has always been missing for me. I would love to meet her and just talk to her, especially because, like, you know, she grew up in Iran. So it'd be so interesting of the similarities that we would have. I mean, I know it doesn't matter necessarily where you grew up because we have the same blood, but that would be interesting. And Toni Morrison. Yes.
Yeah. Shout out. Who is somebody that nourishes your soul?
Oh, nourishes my soul. These are rapid fire.
These
I'm sorry.
These are rapid fire. Yeah. It's okay.
I mean, I feel like I want to say God. And when I get in those like really quiet moments of like just prayer and praise and worship, I feel very like fulfilled.
Good.
Yeah. I don't know if these are supposed to be different sorts of
Can
people, but
no, you're doing great. You're
okay,
doing
I'm
great.
Like, God.
It's so funny because whoever you were going to say
from above,
whoever you were going to say, okay, at whatever I saw, it was a TikTok. My source of info these days. Okay. But I did see a TikTok and it was like, take 20 minutes after you've spent time with somebody, see how you feel afterwards.
I love that. You know what, though? It's an interesting question because I've set my life up in a way where everyone I'm around really nourishes me.
They better.
Like,
they better
this
nourish.
Is, I know when I leave here, I'm going to feel so fulfilled. I feel like that with everyone I'm around now. And that's, I feel so blessed that that's the case. I just don't really create space for people that don't pour into me and make me feel good anymore. You know, so I do feel like my community does nourish my soul too.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's good. It's a great answer. All the answers are, you know, God. Community, you know, all the perfect. Who is somebody that deserves more credit?
In like a personal, my life, or like a broader, the world?
Let's do personal.
Probably my mom. She does a lot. Yeah. I think that like when I look at as much as she does do for her family, like I know she doesn't get anywhere near the credit that she deserves. And yeah, me and my dad talk about that too. And she's just like so selfless. I learn a lot from her in by way of looking out and caring for each other, but also like forgiveness. Very selfless. And I think that is very difficult to do, you know, to be able to even forgive someone when they're not sorry, you know. So I've learned a lot of just like putting my ego aside. And I think that selfless nature does. She definitely deserves a lot of credit and more credit.
That's something that I feel like moms I think it's second nature to them. They don't even realize they're doing something. What I think is incredible is that you get to learn firsthand, even without realizing.
Yeah.
And even the things too that you don't realize you're learning as you're observing. And great moms just have that. I love moms.
I love moms.
They're just the best. So great. You're right. They don't get enough credit. They don't. But really, all flowers to moms. Okay, the last one. Mm-hmm. Who is somebody you're proud of?
Oh, wow. Wow. I don't know why. Yeah. Ooh. I am actually like really proud of myself. I'm really surprised I said that because I wouldn't normally say that. But I'm very tough on myself. And when I look at, I've gone through some pretty intense trials. And I don't really like speak on them. I kind of deal with, you know, we all go through stuff. We all have things handed to us. But I think I'm proud to be able to do something that I love and also help people in the process. It's very weird for me to say this. I guess me.
Every time I get ready to do this, I always know that's going to be my closing question.
Yeah.
And I always actually hope that the person that they're most proud of is themselves.
Really?
I always hope it.
Has that ever been the case?
Yeah, it has. Not often, surprisingly.
I'm very surprised. You saw me. I even got a little like...
Misty? Little misty? Well, the reason why I hope it, you encapsulated right there. You were surprised that it was even your answer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the reason why I hope it is because you can look out to all the somebodies that make you who you are, but you've come so far, right? Like you're in this chair, we are here. You have a story to tell. You are a somebody to yourself. And that's important to acknowledge. So
they've allowed me to be proud of me.
Yeah. You have been doing it. You've been doing it and you've been doing it for yourself.
I think it's like saying it out loud too. Like we're very hard on ourselves.
Holy moly, we have to say it out loud. Like, hey you, I'm proud of you.
Yeah, it's funny. My high school boyfriend, his mom, she used to always tell me like, girl, you got to love on yourself. She would always tell me that. She's like, look at yourself in the mirror, tell yourself you love yourself, kiss yourself on the hand, like whatever. And like all this idea of like loving yourself, being proud of yourself. I don't think we do enough. I mean, I know I don't do enough of it. I know that we're very, very tough on ourselves. But yeah, that was a great that was a great question.
It was a great answer.
Thank you for asking that.
I really hope tonight you're really like, hey, you do, like really.
Look in the mirror like, you right there?
You?
I'm proud of you.
You're doing it. You're doing it.
You did that shit, girl.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. This
is great. Wow, that went so quick. Wait.
Okay. There's more.
This might just
be like an encore.
I know. This is just, I'm sorry. I can't help it.
I love it. Let's do it.
But I would love to ask you.
This is, how did I know this interview was going to be flipped from the editor herself?
No, but I really, this doesn't, I mean, it can be on or off camera, but I do want to also know what inspired this, you know, space of allowing people to pay homage and remember and talk about somebody to them.
It came from a place of sadly, but fortunately, it came from a place of frustration, actually. I had acknowledged that I didn't feel like I had like solid mentors that I guess I wasn't expecting a play-by-play of how to get here, right? A design mentor, you know, an art director mentor, any creative mentor in general. So I was a bit frustrated. I was also a bit frustrated because especially you said it earlier, you want to make something that you haven't discovered yourself, and you want it to be told in a perspective that you resonate with. So same for me. I felt like I was reading all these success stories. And a lot of them would say, I did this myself. You know, I did this on my own. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
You know, even if it was a teacher who doesn't remember you anymore, even if it was somebody in the grocery store that was like, hey, you're XYZ, a friend that you may or may not be close to anymore, a mom, anybody, I want to know about those somebodies.
Yeah.
And I want to acknowledge that those, to me, now that I think about it, now I've zoomed out, have become the mentors I've been seeking this whole time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I got so wrapped up in the term mentor that I thought it was this like one person who's always down for you, who looks out for you. But when you're talking about your community and the people that nourish your soul, I have plenty of mentors for That's different so things mm-hmm. of my life, depending on what it is that whatever season I'm in. So I just wanted to, in hearing your story and hearing people's stories, I want to highlight the somebodies that are a part of their stories, mm-hmm. whether it was for a quick moment or it's been a lifetime of friendship. That's really what I want somebody to be, and I want that to be documented.
I think that's beautiful.
Thank you.
Who's somebody to you?
Well, first of all, thanks for asking that. Yeah, a lot of somebody. I have a lot of somebodies, you know?
Yeah.
Who I have a lot of somebodies that now that you're older, mm-hmm. and you were saying like, oh, you know, you've kind of cut out some people that don't nourish you or, you know, are not in for you. Like, I've really eliminated is a little too harsh, but I think I've separated myself from those people. So in fact, everybody that I'm surrounded with are really somebodies to me.
Isn't that so beautiful?
Isn't that a life mm-hmm. that you just want to live?
Absolutely.
You know, and you said the word quieter earlier. You said sometimes you need to be a little quieter and realize that there are these somebodies out there. Wow. When I got quiet, you know, I don't know if it's like when I just kind of humped over 30 mm-hmm. or something, but I got really quiet and the dust settled.
Yeah.
And I realized who's been there. Mm-hmm. Not that I haven't been, you know, super grateful, you know, in the past, but wow.
Yeah.
And in doing that, that made room for new somebodies like you.
I know.
Like this is, I joked with you, but this was like our 1 year anniversary too.
Yeah,
you
didn't, it was.
It was like the book, but I was like, no, was but beautiful. How about us?
You're like,
send me flowers and friendship.
It was beautiful. Literally. I always talk about that, of how grateful that I am for you.
Likewise.
And I think also too, when our hands are full, there's no space to hold anything new. So,
oh my gosh,
we have to like release, you know, and not everyone and everything can go.
Right.
And that's okay.
That's okay. I'm grateful for the room that we're making for ourselves and for, you know, other people.
Absolutely.
And then also not to think about it in this like pie chart, but a little bit when people go as well. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's not always about replacing them either.
Yeah.
It's about like giving to, you know, maybe potentially people that you neglected. Potentially you neglected yourself. So in that case, I'm like, pay attention to all the somebodies because they are somebodies for sure.
Absolutely. And we don't do anything on our own.
No.
You know, like
what?
It's nothing. It's just us.
What? Know? That's a big joke.
Yeah.
My biggest frustration. So that's what this is for.
Yeah.
Let's talk about all the teachers and all the everybody's.
Thank you for holding this space.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Somebody to Me podcast. Don't forget to follow the Somebody to Me Instagram. That's SMBDY, the number 2, ME. And tag us on your posts or DM us with any thoughts you may have. Please like and subscribe to this podcast on whichever platform you're listening from. I'm Sam Dannon, and thank you for being somebody to me.